Welcome to Bugs and Beards, the podcast home for everything fly fishing and fly tying. Kick back as we sit down and talk with some of your favorite fly tiers and fishermen while we discuss with them the tips and techniques they've learned on the river and behind the vise so that you can use those lessons learned to make your time more effective. Hey everybody, and welcome to Bugs and Beard Podcast again here. I'm your host, Sean Holsinger. Today we're going to This is our first episode, so we're really excited about this. We're going to sit down and talk to the other guys here, the guys that are part of the show. And we got two co-hosts with us. One today is Nick Malloy from Trudda Goods and our good friend Pat Smith here. And we're going to sit down and discuss how we got to where we are today, some of our goals as a podcast, and just try to get to know us a little better. So how about Nick? How about you tell us a little bit about yourself here?
I'm Nick Malloy. As Sean mentioned, I am the co-owner of Trudda Goods. I'm also the captain of Team Trudda, the competitive fly fishing team from here in Central PA. What I'd like to bring to the show is a more technical and some perspective from the competitive side of fly fishing. And that's every tactic that we use to make fishing better for us.
Yeah, that's a great aspect. That's one that a lot of the podcasts don't really cover and get into, is the competitive end of it. So I'm looking forward to you bringing that side of it, and just some of the guests that we're going to have, because we have you on the show here. We're going to have some really great guests already lined up with us, and we'll let them out as they come. But we can really get some good information from a lot of really good fishermen. You want to say anything else about some of the people we have on, or how about, why don't you get into a little bit of your competition experience?
Well, I've competed for 3 years now. I've competed at a national level. Didn't do that great, but we're working on that. I compete probably, 12 or 15 times a year, which is kind of a lot, especially when you have to travel for it. But it's a great thing. It's a great way to learn really fast. It's definitely not for everybody. It's takes a lot of time out of your life, not just to actual fish, but to
do anything at a high level like that requires it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just it's a commitment. You gotta put a lot of hours in every night, tying flies, preparing, fishing, practicing. We call it practice, which is weird because everybody like gets away from work or gets away from their families to relax on the river. It's still relaxing for us, but in a really weird, like, kind of morbid way that we're out really trying to improve ourselves. But that's just the way we have to look at it.
Right. It's actually, and one of the things that with this podcast that we do want to do is we want to shed some positive light on competition. There's a lot of negativeness to competition. And I know that I haven't competed personally, but my son competes, and Nick has taught my son a lot for the competition world. And there's so much that I've learned just by watching the competitions, and that has made me a better fisherman. And there's so much, too, that people don't understand. How you're catching incredible amounts of fish, but at the same time, your hands-on time on those fish is relatively zero, yeah, compared to average fishermen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the worst part about it is handing the fish off to a controller to score it. So every time you catch a fish, you have to hand it to somebody else in your net while keeping it wet, using a wet score trough. But that's the worst part about it, and that's not even bad. It's like maybe 15 seconds comparatively. People think it's, you know, they don't have fish out for a long time, but I see people on the river and they're fumbling all the time. But
fumbling and photos and everything else. And
Yeah, we rarely take photos. If we get a big fish, we'll, you know, take a minute out of our session to take a photo. But
yeah, but time is money in essence with competition fishing, and yep, you don't want to be spending your time.
Yep.
You want your flies in the water.
Absolutely.
Hey, let's get into our other co-host of the show here, Pat Smith. Pat is one of the local guys here. And, well, I'll say a little bit about myself real quick before we get into Pat. I, as most of you know, probably a lot of the reason why some of you came to the podcast is we have Holsinger's Fly Shop and my HolsingersFlyShop.com YouTube channel, so that's probably where you know me from. But Pat is a big contributor to the fly shop and what happens here and what we carry in the shop. He's our, jokingly we call him our research and development man, but he's the wizard of the show here. He's going to help us with a lot of setup, behind the scenes stuff, but he's going to be on the show a lot too. So Pat, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your fishing experience?
Hello, my name is Pat Smith, and I don't bring a whole lot of the fly fishing experience that these guys do. I've been fishing for 30-some years, did a lot of spin fishing. Got into fly fishing 5 years ago and took me by storm. But a lot of the guys here were traditional fishermen, and I seen a lot of the stuff I was watching on the computers and stuff like that leaning towards the competition. I knew there was more and better ways to catch fish.
Yeah, and one of the things is, like, it's kind of funny, like, you don't think that you don't have the experience that the two of us have, but you have the experience that a lot of our guests are going to have, a lot of our listeners to this show. You have that newbie experience. You haven't been in the industry and that kind of stuff, so you bring a great perspective to the show that we're really looking forward to there.
Good.
So, how about you? Do you have any questions for Nick or anything?
Oh, I'm Nick. I don't know. I'm still learning a lot about Nick. Nick, a lot of the competition guys that I've run into and talked, they all have their own ways of doing things. Some guys are specific about beads, which I know Nick. Mm-hmm. Nick is a copper guy. Yeah, talk to Nick about
those parts,
it.
Yeah.
And Nick, he's like copper, silver, right?
Yep. Yeah, those two are the winners.
But right. I will say, the hooks, you know, I'm sure this is going to come up. We have talked and played with umpteen different hooks. And last spring, we got into playing with Nick's Tretta hooks. And they were definitely a game changer.
Right. We carry a couple different brands of hooks here at the shop. And the Tretta hooks, especially the jig hooks, the upside downies, we just can't keep them on the shelf. So it's a great hook if you're interested in a new line of hooks. There's one to check out for you. But you also have some other products with your Tretta Goods line too, though, right?
Yeah, we sell various apparel, which is just fun for us to do. It's basically a hobby, but the bread and butter is in our hooks and beads.
Right.
That's really what helps people. I mean, a shirt's not going to help people, but...
No, shirts are just fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
There again, my son had to have the Mottfly one.
Yeah, which would.
But he's not as serious as you. I will not let him get a Mottfly tattooed on his arm.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't let anybody else do that either, unless they have their life figured out.
So what drove you to having your own hooks?
Really, it was a few guys on my team. We were trying to source a lot of hooks, because a few of us tie a lot, and a few of us don't. And whoever's listening to this, they know who they are. But we were thinking, you know, what if we could buy, you know, bulk hooks that are good. So we reached out to a ton of different suppliers. They're all overseas. I'm sorry for anybody out there, but there's no hooks made in America. That's just there. You'd pay $100 for a pack of 25 of them, and that would be like zero margin on that. So
we have what's called OSHA here in the United States.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, it is what it is. That's
right.
Everything, but. But yeah, so we found our supplier, and we tested them out, and we're like, wow, these are, like, game-changing. Like, all of our other hooks, like, we've used other brands, and they'd either bend out, they'd rust, they just didn't fit this bill, or they didn't fit this bill, and they checked all the boxes. So we just decided to start selling them. We were like, this might be a good opportunity, and we just did it. And it's not, you know, our business is not, like, you know, we need to crush our competitors or whatever. It's like, that's our hobby. Like, it's just one of my good friends and I just selling them. So it's nothing crazy. We just put our money into it at the beginning and it's just running itself. So.
Right. And I will vouch for them. They are great hooks. I tie predominantly almost all my jigs on those jig hooks.
Yeah.
And they hold fish. That's the thing. They hold fish. And they ride true. For some reason, I don't know why, but I hook more fish in the upper lip with them. Mm-hmm. And
Of course, you say right in the snout.
Right in the snout, where it's that good hard part of the nose where the hook will stay in. It's just, we have the best luck with them. Pat, is there anything else, like, anything that you, what's your favorite style of fishing? We'll go with that. There's a question for you.
I would have to say Euro.
Yeah, but what facet of that, facet of that, if you will?
What facet? You kind of got me lost on that one.
I mean, there's Euro nymphing, but there's the different underlying methods of it. Like, Europe is huge, and it's weird, like, whenever you talk to, we'll have guys on the show talking about it, but these different countries that come in have, all have these different styles because of the water they fish. So, for example, the youth team was just in Poland, and Polish nymphing is this weird technique where you use, like, you'd think it's Euro nymphing, like, we're going to go over there and tight line, or just, like, cast, like, upstream and float our sighter, or just use this or whatever. They would use, like, super light flies or even unweighted flies and cast, like, just a four-weight line as far as they could upstream and just put a mend on it. Hmm. And that was it. Because there's, like, there's not structure. There's, all their water is, like, weird. I don't know if that's, like, generalizing the entire country, but that's what they learned Polish nymphing was. So there's all those different kinds.
Okay, well, here's a question. We'll throw back to Nick on this one. We all know there's Polish nymphing, Spanish nymphing, Czech nymphing. Euro nymphing is the Americanized version of the combination of all of them together.
Absolutely.
So why don't you explain that end of it a little bit?
So, I mean, if you really get involved with it and you really think about it and you really put some of those methods to practice, Euro nymphing, to me, is, I mean, it is putting that combination of all of those different countries together, what we've learned over the years, what those competitors, those world's competitors, brought back with them every year they competed. For example, you know, if you're going to be French nymphing, you're going to be very light and upstream. You could do that with any rig.
Right.
You know, and you could, you know, those different methods, we call it floating our sighter, they call it something else, right, if they wanted. There's all those different methods for different stream types. So if you're on a stream that has, 1 minute there's a deep flat, and then another minute it's just pocket water, like, you have to adapt really quickly. So Euro nymphing is all of those different things. The deep flat, you're casting, you're bombing cast upstream and floating your sighter.
You're adjusting your leader to suit your needs at that time.
You certainly could. In competition, we just take different rods for that stuff. But if we're just out fishing, we'll just float our sighter with anything. It might not be as great. But, you know, you're, those different water types, you're picking a different method for each one, and you're adjusting. Even in, if you have to do something different, like in pocket water, you might want to dry drop it. So you're adjusting those different little methods as you go. So that's Euro nymphing to me in a whole. And then you have all those little subcategories.
Right. Now, I'm going to guess for you, you would say your version of it would be tight lining.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And that would probably, for the most part, be mine, too, would be the tight lining.
I do the tight lining. I like to bend the rules a little bit. I see a lot of guys on Facebook, and they're like, oh, you can't go out there and chuck headbanger streamers with a Euro rod. I see lots of guys questioning that, and they're asking these guys how they're doing it. You've been with me, and I've done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I do it, too.
We know people that have done it. That's not really a Euro nymphing situation, but I still think you're adapting to what you're fishing in that area. If you're fishing a big, deep hole and you're like, I know there's big fish in here, and you're chucking flies and changing flies, and for me, I just, big fish eat big fish.
Sure, yeah.
So I chuck big baits when I get into a spot where I know there's big fish, and I don't think you need a special rod for that. A lot of the guys say that. They're like, oh, you got to have a 5-weight regular rod. You know, carry 2-3 rods with you going up the creek. Now, like you said, you guys do it for comps.
That's different. That's different. That's different, right. Yeah.
But for the average guy going up the stream, he's not going to carry 2-3.
It's just awkward. That's the only, when you're fishing a big streamer on a 3-weight, it's awkward.
Oh, yeah.
But, right. What do you, I mean, it, it once you hook a fish, it's the same as any other fish.
Right.
Yep, I agree.
And to add to Pat, I can remember a day when I was fishing with one of your kids on your team there, and I just drove him nuts because I switched to wet flies with my 20-foot leader and figured it out really quick, and he couldn't figure it out and couldn't catch fish, and that drove him nuts. But it's just an adaptability thing, and mm-hmm. it's figuring out how to make the best of the situation.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the times. We were fishing in North Carolina preparing for youth nationals. I was just there as a mentor. But one of the streams, these fish were sitting, they were suspended. So, like, normally around here in Pennsylvania, we don't get fish suspended. They're always sitting on the bottom. Like, right. So, I mean, they'll come up and eat an emerger.
Right, they'll come from the bottom to eat.
But they don't sit mid-column right. unless they're in, like, a super deep hole, maybe.
Right.
But these fish were all suspended, and it was super awkward. And you were figuring it out, like, you were like, oh, I could just fish this mid-column, and you just held a little higher up. You didn't let it sink as deep. Or you let it sink, and you lifted that rod so fast out of the water, and they ate it on the rise. Yeah. Which bugs don't naturally do that. So it's like the wet fly thing.
Oh, yeah.
If you saw those fish, they would have ate wet flies all day.
Yeah. Well, with this situation with him, he switched to a dry dropper, but it got so dark that he couldn't see his dry.
Right.
So he couldn't see when they were just getting hit on a dropper. Well, on a wet fly, the wet fly is your indicator.
Pretty much, you just hang on.
Yeah, you hang on, and when the rod bends in half, you set the hook.
Yeah.
And he was kind of getting frustrated because I was just catching one after another. And all I did was put a weighted wet fly on the end to get me to be able to cast that 20-foot leader, and was swinging the hatch that was coming off on the other one. It was tearing them up. But it's so fun that I can switch with that 20-foot leader. And like, a lot of guys will complain about, oh, you don't need that. No, you don't need it. You can fish with a 9-foot 5X leader, and that's just fine. But I can be more versatile and fish a lot more versatile with the 20-foot leader. I mean, you don't have to change. When I'm in a deep hole, hey, you just drop her a little deeper, you know?
Yeah, and then you could fish single dry if you want.
Right.
You could do whatever you want.
You're not going to cast it 50 feet with a 20-foot leader.
Not if you made it a little shorter, maybe, but...
Right. Yeah, you shorten up your leader, you can cast it when you get to be able to use your fly line a little bit more for the cast. I mean, that's the difference. You're using your fly line in a dry fly leader setup.
Yep.
But if you're fishing close and tight, which a lot of our fishing around here, that's one thing I will say here. Well, I'll take a little time out. We're Central Pennsylvania guys here. We're in the heart of fly fishing country. And so a lot of the things that we may be talking about here may not fit into the guys that are from out west, but... it's all the same. A lot of our streams around here are smaller streams, and even the bigger streams, you just look for the small stream inside the big stream when you're fishing too.
So, pretty much, yep.
So I mean, it's not really that we're going to be talking like a foreign language to you in our fishing style, but we have that Central Pennsylvania feel to us, and that's what we're used to fishing, the little limestones, some spring creeks. So it's a great area to live. One thing, the shop here, we have Holsinger's Fly Shop, and it's in, like I said, Central Pennsylvania, right smack dab in the middle on the lower side. And within, 20 miles of the shop, we got probably 6 Class A trout waters.
I mean, you might be light on that, but we'll keep it at that.
I'm probably light on that, yeah. I mean, that's Class A, and then there's stocked waters, too. Class A, for the guys not from Pennsylvania, Class A is wild trout producing water. Water that can produce trout on its own that doesn't need to be stocked. And we have very healthy populations of brown trout, wild browns around here. So what actually got you into fly fishing to begin with, Pat? Let's go with that question.
I had a heart attack. And I didn't have a lot going on at home. I was just sitting there, didn't have a lot to do, and my brother-in-law, he had come to me, and he's like, hey, you love the fish. And I said, yeah, I love the fish. And he's like, I know you fly fish. I said, yeah, off and on. And, well, you got to get into tying flies. And the guys I work with, they would laugh about this now, because I just, for years, I was like, I am not tying flies. I did not see the money that you put into it. And I could not see another way of going about it. And it got the best of me, and I walked into this shop, and your dad, Ron, sold me the tools, one or two flies that night, and then he sent me on my way with some material to tie at least two or three patterns, and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, you've been really hooked. You're a regular here when you find the time to get in here. But the other thing that you bring to the shop is the, like I said, we jokingly call you our research and development guy. You spend a lot of time on the internet finding out, trying to figure out what the new thing, what the next big fly is going to be and the next big material. And that's one thing that's kept us ahead in the game. And one of those things was Trutta hooks, you know. And we was able to get them into the shop, and we're the only shop other than your website that mm-hmm. carries them. And so they're flying off the shelf here. But yeah, you've done a great job, Pat, with finding different things that may be out of the ordinary or something, or that's new to the market, just because of what you've watched and seen on YouTube and that kind of stuff.
It's definitely a lot. There's a lot of material out there. And then there's two different sides to the fly fishing. There's old school, and I don't know if you'd call it new school. They call us your and them first. But like a lot of the things that they teach you, the older fellas, like Nick was saying earlier about your flies, these fish were suspended, and you guys just jigged your flies up a little bit, and sometimes just pulling them out of the water, trout chase them. The older fellows, they would tell you there is no way that's going to work. It has to be a perfect presentation. Can't be no drag, no drift, can't do this, can't do that. And I'm kind of like Nick. You got to make the best situation for what it is. Your material is like that. You have guys that want to try a new material, and then you have guys that, no matter how good that new material is, it's not going to outfish what they have today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, it's not Danville thread.
That's it.
Yeah. Yep. You know, that's one of the biggest ones we got. Guys want Danville thread. Well, UTC makes awesome thread. What's the difference? It's thread is thread. That's one of the big things that I always try to point out in my YouTube channel, in my videos. Substitute. Use what you have when you tie. I can't stress that enough. That's the crazy thing about fly tying, and I think where a lot of the Euro nymphing stuff came from, a lot of the Euro nymphing has simplified fly fishing.
It
really totally has it, especially the fly tying end of it. Less is more in Euro nymphing. Oh, yeah. And there's been a lot of material that's hit the market because of it that just simplifies things, and you have to learn to adapt to that kind of stuff. But just some of the, I mean, we're just sitting here in the shop now and looking on the walls at some of the stuff we have that you wouldn't see in some shops. That's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's just because of the local influence as well. I mean, everybody wants it. Everybody wants to do it. It's a method that works. I mean, it's a method that works anywhere. You were mentioning it out west earlier. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you want to produce a lot of fish, like, you could go and fish out west and, you know, do great any day, but
oh,
like
definitely.
If you nymph it, it's unreal.
Yeah,
it's unreal. If you take your tactics here and they're just trout.
Oh, definitely.
And they're dumb.
And you know, it's funny too that it crosses species too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Things are a little different for different fish in different areas, and you have to learn the different areas. But again, they're just trout.
They're just trout. And the thing about Euro nymphing is, one of the big things about Euro nymphing is you are putting the fly, you're presenting your fly to the fish in its natural drift.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that makes it look natural to the fish. We're not imitating exactly the fly. We're not tying an elaborate blue-winged olive with two wings laid back and drifting it down the surface. We're tying a pertagon, which is nothing but a bullet.
Yeah, silhouette.
It's silhouette of a bullet. But if you lay that silhouette against a blue-winged olive on the bottom of a rock when you lift it over, perfect match.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing you have to grasp with the Euro nymphing. You can see that when you pick things up like that. But it's the presentation of the fly that catches the fish, less than the fly actually itself that catches the fish. And that's kind of one of the biggest misconceptions you have to get over are these pretty flies. We tie some ugly looking flies. So ugly they named them the turd.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, anything that's simple enough that, I mean, a lot of the stuff that we tie is just bred out of, this doesn't take long. Right. If I see a fly that might work, I mean, you know, I'm always skeptical when I see a new fly because I'm like, all right, I know what I know, and, you know, trout are dumb, and I know how this drifts. When I look at flies, I look at how they're going to drift, and it's like, right. Like a thinner profile in like a hard body fly or even a waltz worm, but a thin waltz worm, like it's going to sink fast. And, you know, you have, you know, your mops, you have your eggs and things that are a little bit bulkier, like they don't sink fast at all and they affect your drift. And you have to know when to use stuff like that. So when I look at new flies like that, I get skeptical, but on the same token, we tie things that don't take long.
Right.
And that's what we like. If I see something crazy, I'm like, eh, it takes too long. I'm not going to tie any of those, and I'll just go back to tying something else.
Well, while we're on that, I want to change course a little bit here. How we got to be here today. And that's the name Bugs and Beards. Bugs and Beards came out of a little group of us that started a fly tying here in the shop like every other Thursday night. There was a group of us that got together, and we still do. It's off season right now, so it's wrestling season for my son, so I'm driving crazy. But anyway, we get together, we sit around and tie and share patterns with each other, and that was one of the funny things that you watch and how our group as a whole has changed too. But we'll get in here, and I tie for YouTube and different things like that, so I'm not constantly always tying Euro patterns to fill my box. I'm tying for videos to show customers and stuff to the shop and my YouTube channel what different methods to tie. And I will say my YouTube channel is more, I try to teach, when I teach on the YouTube channel, I try to teach technique over pattern. And like the last episode I did here, as we're recording this right now, was a 20-inch stone. The 20-inch stone I tied simply because there's so many common techniques in that fly that you use in other flies. There's the splayed wings of the bites, or the splayed tail, tying bites in, how to do that. Using peacock body to wrap the thorax. How many flies have a peacock thorax? Like there's, and feather wings for, or sorry, feathers for the legs on the fly. The turkey wing case. I try to tie flies that show techniques rather than patterns. And but as I tie a lot of that kind of stuff. But when we sit here at the table and tie, if it's more than 2 minutes, you're not tying it.
Nope, absolutely not.
Yeah. It's fast and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Pat, what do you like to tie?
I like to tie flies. Kind of like Nick, I want them fast, simple, because you lose a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean,
given on the day, too, it's really weird, right? Isn't it?
Some days you can go out and fish and you're like, hey, I only lost one or two flies. And the next day you go, you might lose a dozen.
Yeah, it's weird.
And to put them back into my box, I'm tying, so I want something that I can produce very fast, fill in my box, and be done and ready for the next time.
Right.
With variation, too.
Yes. Yeah. Color.
Now, I... Nick, how long you been tying?
Oh, I have to think about that. A number of years. Tying at this capacity, like 3 or 4 years, yeah. Okay. But like, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years, something like that.
Okay, well, how old are you?
26.
Okay, I've tied longer than he's been alive.
That makes me feel old, Sean.
No, that makes me feel old. No, I've been tying for 30 years. I've been tying since I was 12. I'm 43 now, so 21 years. And I actually enjoy the old school flies a lot to get back to tying them every now and then. I'll go through cycles where I'll tie for myself, which is a lot of Euro patterns and that kind of stuff. And then, like, man, I'm bored with this. Let's do some wet flies.
Oh, I agree. I still like to sit down and tie some of those patterns. But at the end of the day, when I'm done and I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, that took a lot of time. And if I go out and lose it in a snag or in a fish,
yeah, I tie,
I'll never get that time back.
I tie a lot of shallow water flies, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yes. I'm not fishing my stone flies. I'm not fishing them if I can't wade to them a lot of times.
I agree.
Yep. But I'll tell you what, another thing, just a little off track again, I tend to bunny trail. I'll get back to something I was saying with Nick here. The Euro nymphing style doesn't just work for trout. It works for smallmouth. Pat and I had a blast this year fishing for smallmouth with the Euro nymph technique and stone flies. Because it's the same thing. Well, actually, where we were fishing, it was one cast trout, one cast smallmouth. So that made it a blast. But which is kind of unique to have a cold water and a warm water fish right together like that. But man, that technique is just killer. And it also kills on the steelhead, too.
Oh, yeah. And it kills on the local landscape company's koi ponds, too. Oh, it's great there.
Yeah, we won't go there, though.
Hopefully they're not listening to that. Just incriminated myself.
Oh, I thought you was incriminating somebody else.
Well, I mean, that's who taught them that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They just blast nymphs. They don't know what they are, but they blast them.
That's funny. Plastic pond. You don't have... Well, I guess they would see little mosquito nymphs swimming around, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
The creek. They probably see more than you think.
Maybe. Yeah, it might be. It's not even plastic yet. I don't think it's plastic. It might be lined, but there's rocks in there.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But anyway. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about just what direction we want this show to get as we start to close up the show here. We want to... Like I said earlier to you, we want to bring a show that's entertaining and educational, and that's the big thing. We want to try to bring a lot of the people in here that you know. We all have different aspects. Nick is our guy who is our Euro comp guy. He knows a lot of the competition guys. Pat has a lot of the social media connections, so we're going to have some guests that you know from social media and stuff like that. And I'm a tire. I'm a show tire, so I do a lot of the show scenes, know a lot of the guys that you know, and we became good friends with them. Like, I will say, like, we'll have guys like Tim Camesa on here, and, you know, Tim fishes with us a lot here at the shop. So we're going to have him on probably a couple times. And just guys like that, we're going to have a varied audience. So to keep you always interested, and is there anything you guys want to add to what we're going to bring to the show?
I think diversity, and I think that's great for all ages of fly fishermen out there, and even age in experience of fly fishing. Like you said, Sean, we have fly tires, we have competitors that are coming in, we have conservationists.
Right.
Is that a word? Conservationalists?
Conservationist, I think it would be.
I'm going to look that one up. We have just a lot of different people coming in. So it's not going to be like just one of those guide podcasts that talks about their guide outfitter or anything like that.
Right. We kind of want to stay away from that and have something a little bit unique and, you know, have more of a relationship.
There you go with a good word there.
Podcast rather than an advertisement style of a podcast. Like I said earlier here, Nick owns Trout of Goods, and I have Holsinger's Fly Shop along with my dad, Ron. And, you know, that's not what this is about. This is about, you know, about sharing this great sport that we love. So we're going to blast HolsingersFlyShop.com out there a lot and Trout of Goods too. But that's not what it's about. And, we just want to welcome everybody to the show here, and if there's anything you guys want to hear, any guests that you think would be cool guests to have on the show, you know, we're gonna have this out on a couple of different platforms. We'll have a website, a Facebook page, all that kind of stuff. Actually, we have the Facebook page, the Bugs and Beards group. You can just click on the link to get accepted to the group. But you know, hit us up and message us. There's guys that we don't know that could be great guests that maybe you guys know. So feel free to reach out to us that way.
And we're definitely going to have a melting pot. I mean, it's not just going to be Euro.
Oh, no doubt, no.
It's going to be streamers and commercial tires, YouTube tires.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of YouTube tires. Well, not a lot of YouTube. There's not a lot of
Well,
there is a lot of YouTube tires out there, but there's some that are better than others.
Yes.
So we'll stop there. But no, and you know, I have one of my mentors. You know, I want to have my mentor on here that taught us how to wet fly fish. It's almost a forgotten art form. And I love to wet fly fish. I got Pat hooked on it there the 1 year, and then he got into your and everything. And
I still fish wet flies.
Yeah, at the right time, you can't beat it.
Yes, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
Like, yeah, it's a blast. That's exactly right. It's a blast when they hit your
wet fly. And you still can do it. I mean, once in a blue moon, I will still have a heavier point fly and throw that wet fly on top.
Well, the other...
And it still works.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, too, like, when you're an addict like me, and I'm not going to say how many rods I have, because then my wife might know. But if you're an addict like me, you have multiple rods, and you just don't want to fish the 10-foot 3 every time you go out, or the 10-foot 2, whatever. You like to pull the 7-foot 3 weight out every now and then, swing a tandem rig, and feel the rod bend in half whenever one of them hits it, so... You're just sitting over here laughing at me.
It's not me.
I just do that on my rod. Just swing them. You don't need wet flies. Just use your nymphs. Just swing them up.
Oh, I fish. Well, and there's another thing, too, we'll get into. We'll probably hit on that someday, too. What rod you need to have, and then that you actually don't need to have that rod. You can fish with what you have.
Right. That'd be a good topic for a show.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Fish with what you have, just like tie with what you have. Because, I mean, I've done YouTube videos using an 8.5-foot 4-weight just to prove that you can Euro nymph on an 8.5-foot 4-weight. Yeah. I've cut steelhead Euro nymphing on an 8.5-foot 4-weight.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
Right, you can. It's not the most productive. It's not the most efficient, but it can be done.
Yeah, you can do it on anything.
Yeah,
if you can do it on a bamboo pole if you want. Whatever right.
The technique, the style is the same no matter what rod length you have. Just some rods would be more effective than other rods.
Yeah, it's just all efficiency and effectiveness. I can get a lot more reach with my 11-foot rod than your 8-foot rod.
Yep,
it's just those little things. That's it.
Yep, you don't want to be out on a big wide open river with an 8.5-foot. You can't reach. What you can with an 11-foot.
That's right.
A lot of walking.
Yeah.
So. Zigzagging back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, that's about it for today's show, guys. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you keep coming back to us and listening to us. And like we said, reach out to us. We're going to be on a couple different social media platforms like Instagram, Facebook, things like that. We'll have a website up. And reach out to us if you have anybody you'd like to see on the show. Anything else for you guys, Dad?
That's it. Thanks, guys. Hope you tune in.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Bugs and Beer Podcast. This podcast was brought to you in part by HolsingersFlyShop.com and Trotta Goods. We truly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to our show. If you enjoyed the show, please take a second to smash the like button and subscribe to us. You can find our show on popular podcast apps like Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and iTunes. Until next time, keep your tip up and tight lines.